Chapter 25. Our warship soars towards West Virginia. The night slides by through the vast windows of the Mogadorian Bridge. Stars wink overhead, while down below, streetlights and houses are lit up. This part of the northeastern United States is yet untouched by the invasion. I wonder if anyone down there happens to look up and see our massive, scarab-shaped vessel. Or are we just another dark cloud passing across the night sky? I light up my lumen. It feels good to have my legacies back in full after what Fury Dunrod did to me. It's like my eyes are able to see color again. I still feel the dull ache of overuse inside me, like a thread that's slowly fraying in my chest, not to mention the burning sensation in my hands that won't go away. I ignore all that just like I ignore the sharper pain of the wound on my neck, still raw from Marina's mostly unpracticed stitches. I hold my hand out like a blade and make a small, concentrated fire jet out from my fingers, push the temperature, get it white hot, a blowtorch of my own making. Then I set to work. I'm alone on the observation deck, a small balcony designed to be comfortable by Mogadorian standards, positioned over the bridge. Down below, most of the others are at work preparing for our attack. We've got our course set, and luckily, maintaining altitude and flying in a straight line are things Rex can do on his own. Lexa watches over his shoulder, trying to pick up a few things in case she needs to help pilot later. There are four weapon stations, one for each quadrant of the warship, and each features an array of buttons that command different guns, along with holographic video feeds for aiming. There's also a fifth station that operates the ship's main energy cannon, a smaller version of the one on the Anubis that is capable of quickly erasing entire city blocks. According to Adam, there are supposed to be teams of engineers below decks to deal with loading power cells and making sure the weapons don't overheat. I killed them all, so we're just going to have to hope nothing explodes or runs out of batteries. Malcolm sits at one of the weapon stations, getting a crash course in how to operate the guns from Five. Surprisingly, Five is pretty patient with him. I remember back in Chicago when they both first joined us. Sam's dad was pretty decent to Five. He's been good to all of us, really. I direct my hearing in their direction as Five's explanation winds down.
"Do you mind if I ask you how you know all this?"
Malcolm asks Five. Five runs a hand over the bristles of hair on his scalp.
"I was supposed to command one of these," he says simply. "At least, that's what he told me."
"I see,"
Malcolm says. There's an awkward silence.
"Could you show me again how to deploy the chaff?"
"Sure."
Behind Malcolm and Five, Sam and Adam stand at the commander station. Adam is drilling Sam on different functions of the warship. He outlines which consoles control the shields, engines, and life support. He gives Sam an idea of which systems are absolutely necessary and which we could lose in a pinch. The hope is that Sam will be able to use his legacy to communicate with the warship, verbally giving the ship commands to replace the roles of the dozens of crew members we simply don't have. Six sits nearby, watching them with a bemused smile. I listen in.
"You know," Six says, "the last time he communicated with a ship, he almost crashed it."
"Hey," Sam replies, "that's not fair."
Adam frowns at Sam.
"Maybe I should be writing some of this down."
We know the Anubis waits for us in West Virginia. The flagship of the Mogadorian fleet stands between us and Cetricus Ra. We need to take it down with an untrained skeleton crew. Both warships are shielded, but the Anubis has bigger guns. According to Adam, our shields will degrade faster than the Moog's. Good thing we're packing more than just their weapons. I look away from the others at the sound of sizzling in my hands. My white-hot lumen torch is starting to work. I hold in my hands the Voron noose that once scarred Cetricus Ra, and now has scarred me. On closer inspection, since it's not tied around my throat, the noose's material looks like a vine you'd find hanging in a jungle, except it has the texture of hardened plastic. Each edge is razor sharp, and as I melt it down, I'm careful not to cut my fingers. The material, found only on Lorien, glows a deep purple as I heat it up, and begins to take on a consistency like candle wax. I don't let the melting material drip to the floor. Instead, I catch it with my telekinesis and begin to reshape it. When I'm done, I've turned the noose into something more like a dagger. It's about the length of my forearm, with a makeshift handle where I allowed the Voron to bell outward into a guard. The blade itself is diamond-shaped, with four edges and a wicked point at the end. I turn it over in my hand, test the weight, and slash it back and forth. This is what I'll use if they manage to take my legacies away again. I'll put this right through Cetricus Ra's heart. Badass, Nine says from the entranceway. I was so focused, I didn't even hear Nine approach. He grins at me, eyeing the blade. I float it over to him with my telekinesis, and he plucks it out of the air, taking a few overhand swings with it. Not bad, he concludes, floating it back to me. I miss my staff, man. Can't believe that shit got broken. Yeah, I miss my shield, I reply, tilting my head in Nine's direction. So, what's up? Nine comes farther into the room and leans against the railing at the edge of the deck. He lowers his voice.
I wanted to say sorry for that time I beat you up in Chicago.
I actually snort from surprise at that. Nine, what?
And also in New York, when I blew our stealth approach by clapping my hands with those stupid thunder gloves. Sorry about that, too.
Okay, I say, holding up my hands. What are you doing?
Pretty much any time that I said something that pissed you off or almost got you killed, I'm sorry for all that.
Okay, look, if you're going through all this because you think we might die down there, it's not necessary.
Oh, there's no might for me, Nine says, locking eyes with me. I'm definitely living through this shit. You, on the other hand, you got this whole fly-off-on-your-own-don't-need-friends thing going. Like, you're just gonna rage until you burn out. Like, you don't care what happens to you.
I start to protest, but Nine holds up a hand.
No, it's cool. The rest of them might not get it, but I do. Leave it all on the field. You do what you need to do, man. But I don't want you dying while I've still got all this shit on my conscience.
Okay, Nine, I reply, shaking my head. You're forgiven.
And also, he continues, you should know that I'd prefer it if you made it out of this alive with me. You're my brother, and, that would be ideal.
Before I can stop him, Nine has me wrapped up in a bear hug. It doesn't last long, and it ends with him pounding on my back hard enough that I cough.
You've always been the best sidekick a guy could ask for, he says.
Eat shit, Nine, I reply. He grins at me.
See you out there, Johnny.
Nine leaves me alone on the observation deck. I hook the Voron dagger through one of my belt loops. We're closing in on West Virginia now. I should make my way down and get ready. Instead, I linger up here, thinking about what he said. Is he right? Do I not want to make it through this? I try to imagine an after, a world where we've defeated Cetricus Ra and I'm still alive. Used to be daydreams like that were what I lived for. Now I can't picture it. There's no fear in me. Fear, I guess, is rooted entirely in anticipation, worrying that things won't turn out the way you've planned, that something will hurt, dreading the sorrow to come. All that goes away when you simply accept finality. It isn't so bad, knowing there's no future. It's freeing. On my way down from the observation deck, I bump into Marina. She stands on the stairs, arms crossed, looking out over our friends as they acquaint themselves with the warship. I know exactly where she's staring. 5. His shoulders are hunched as he sits at one of the weapons consoles, running a diagnostic while Sam and Malcolm look on. He must feel her glaring at him, but he chooses to endure it rather than acknowledge it. When I get closer, I notice that the air around Marina is a little cooler. Marina looks over at me, and her lips quirk downward in a frown. "I already know what you're going to say," I tell her. "We can't trust him. He's dangerous." All of which I agree with.
"And I already know what you are going to say to me," she replies, mimicking my tone. "He is a necessary evil. The enemy of my enemies, my friend. Desperate times call for desperate measures."
"Tell me I don't use that many cliches." She frowns at me. I rub my hands together to warm them up. "He saved lives at Patience Creek, Marina. He saved my life."
"Yes, I heard about his performance,"
she replies, a note of distaste in her voice.
"Sam told me how he relished what he was doing, how he could have simply killed Fairy Dunra, but instead repeatedly chopped at her arm. If we let ourselves become that ruthless and that brutal, do we really win?"
I think about how many Moogs I killed during my attack on this warship. And then I remember how 5 looked at me when I first spoke to him at Patience Creek. How he told me I was like him now. A shadow must pass over my face because Marina squeezes my arm.
"I'm sorry. I don't mean to lecture," she says. "I just want us to remember where 5 is concerned. Killing a common enemy does not make him an ally. Using him as a weapon does not mean he's willingly saving lives."
"Usually, I'd agree with you. But not tonight." Marina nods slowly, resigned to the fact she'll be fighting alongside 5.
"And what about after, John? Will he pay for what he did?"
There's that word again. After. I look away from Marina. "After will be up to you," I tell her. She starts to ask me another question, but I'm already hustling the rest of the way down the steps. Adam catches my eye as I stride onto the bridge.
"We're almost there," he says. "I don't want to get us too close, in case they've got scouts deployed."
"All right," I reply and glance over at Ella. She sits at one of the abandoned stations, massaging her temples. "Were you able to create that map?" She nods.
"I scanned it in. Malcolm helped with estimating the scale."
At that, Sam's dad tips an imaginary hat.
"Pulling it up now,"
Adam says. A wide section of the bridge's floor-to-ceiling window goes opaque, and, a second later, a three-dimensional map of the Mogadorian mountain base appears on screen. It isn't exactly blueprint quality, considering Ella and Malcolm produced it by hand and from memory, but it's accurate. Those memories were drawn from me, from 9, from 6, and Sam, and from Adam. We'd all been inside the mountain base before. We've all carried around visions of its interior, even though they're colored with panic or chaos or torture. Ella sat with each of us for a few minutes, plucked out those memories, and turned them into something tangible. "All right. Once we've dealt with the Anubis, we're attacking here. I indicate the mountain's cavernous entrance. While the entrance is at ground level, it's at about the midway point of the map. The Moogs have hollowed out the mountain both above and below the entrance. We've got one cloaking device still hooked up to Lex's ship. She'll drop us through the base's force field and then pull back to a safe distance until we need extraction. It'll be me, Six, Marina, Nine, Adam, and Five down there.
Sam's brow furrows at that, like I expected it would.
Wait, what are the rest of us doing?
At first, Ella will be coordinating the different groups telepathically. In the event that Cetricus Ra takes away our legacies, I want a backup team to bring in Ella so she can use her Draenen and even the odds.
Ella nods at that,
although she looks uneasy at the prospect of facing her great-grandfather again. Until then, the rest of you will be flying this warship and destroying anything that comes out of that mountain that isn't one of us. With your legacy, Sam, you'll do more good up here.
Nine snaps his fingers at Rex and gets the wide-eyed Moog's attention.
And don't try any bullshit! My man Sam Good here will kill you!
Sam sighs and looks apologetically at Rex. I'm not going to kill you, Sam says, although he immediately reconsiders that statement.
I mean, I will if you try something, but you seem like an okay guy, so, yeah, don't do that. I'll mess you up.
Adam pats Rex on the shoulder. The other Moog shakes his head and becomes real interested in the schematics in front of him. We're expecting to hit heavy resistance in the 50 yards between the force field and the entrance, I continue. We're going to use blunt force to fight our way in.
Five and Nine both smile at that.
Except for Five, I continue, and his face falls.
What?
He asks. I turn to him. You're going to fly Six and Adam through the entrance while invisible.
Six looks in Five's direction.
You're sane at the moment, right?
Yes,
Five answers brusquely. He keeps his eye pinned to the map and takes a deep breath.
It's a good strategy.
No one was asking you, Marina says.
I press on before this can get any more heated. Once they're in, Six and Adam will attempt to disable the base's shields.
I point to an elevated section above the entrance.
We're not exactly sure where these controls are, but Adam thinks they're around here. While they're doing that, Five will hit the Moogs from behind.
Sam raises his hand.
What are the rest of us doing up here?
Once the shields are down, hopefully you guys can give us some air support. You'll want to have the main energy cannon ready to go.
We've got a mountain to knock down,
Six adds.
Exactly. We're going to bury Cetricus Ra in there. But first, we've got to make sure whatever twisted experiments he's concocted are destroyed.
I point into the depths of the mountain, down twisting corridors and across narrow rock bridges. I remember the sounds that came from those depths from the last time I visited the mountain base. Animal screams, tortured cries.
We figure if Cetricus Ra is anywhere, he's down here. That's where the vats are. It's where he'll be working his experiments.
You assume he doesn't come up to say hello when we knock,
Nine says.
You're right. I agree. He might come out to fight us. Either way, he and everything he's touched gets destroyed. By the time the sun rises, he's dust in a fucking crater.
You make it all sound so easy, Five mutters.
Oh, it won't be easy, I reply. But we can do this. We have to do this.
It's everything,
Six adds.
This is for everything.
I can sense some of my friends looking at me expectantly. I try to think of the kind of speech I would have given a few days ago, when Sarah was still alive. Look, there's nothing more I can say. We've come this far together, and we're going to get through this together. No more running. No more hiding. No more words. We fight until we win.
Nods all around. I look at every face, meet every set of eyes, or eye, and I'm amazed by how calm I feel. I look beyond the mountain map on the window, into the night. The stars are out. It's time.
I'm going to go scout the Anubis, I say. I'll tell you when you're clear to approach.
Be safe, Marina says, her words echoed by most of the others.
Adam, help me work the airlock, would you? I ask on my way out. The Mogadorian raises an eyebrow at me, surprised to be asked to help with a task that he knows I could do on my own. He doesn't make a thing about it, though. He simply nods and follows me into the hallway. Together we walk down the empty corridors of the warship. The signs of our earlier attack still linger, Mogadorian ash crunching beneath our feet. Adam doesn't say anything. He waits for me to speak.
Listen.
I start when I'm sure we're out of range of any enhanced listeners. Once you disable the force field, I need you to come back up to the warship.
Okay,
Adam says. There's a chance things might not go as planned down there, I continue. If that's the case, I'll let you know telepathically. When I tell you, no matter what, no matter who on board might try to stop you, you've got to fire the warship's cannon. Destroy the mountain. Erase it. It doesn't matter if some of us are still inside. Cetricus Ra and his work can't be allowed to see the sunrise. Adam stops mid-stride and grabs my arm.
You're serious.
You know I am. His hand tightens on my arm, then drops away. He keeps his tone measured.
Why are you asking me to do this, John? Because I'm the Mogadorian, that means I'm cold and heartless? That I don't care about what happens to you all?
No, I say, taking him by the shoulders. I know you care, Adam. I know it'll kill you to do it. But you also know that I'm right. That stopping Cetricus Ra is more important than anything. If worse comes to worst, you'll pull that trigger. Adam holds my gaze for a few seconds, then looks away. He steps back so that my hands fall off his shoulders.
Okay, John,
he says simply. Okay. I don't actually need him to help me with the airlock. Alone, I pass through the warship's ravaged docking bay, open up the exit, and fly into the night. Wilderness passes by beneath me, peaceful and untouched. The wind plucks at my clothes, cool against the sweat on my back. The mountain rises up before me, dark purple in the night, waiting for me. I go invisible. The Anubis hovers over the mountain, an insectoid guardian. Its metallic hull reflects the moonlight. Searchlights from the warship's underbelly comb the side of the mountain, the cleared space around the cavern entrance, the sparse woods beyond. They're expecting us. The Anubis does a slow circle around the mountain's peak, prowling just like it did in New York City. This time, I'm not running away. From my back pocket, I produce my satellite phone. I dial the number programmed in for Lawson. Two simple words. Open fire. I don't listen for a response. I know what happens next. Soon, all around the world, counterattacks will begin. I drop the phone, let it smash down in the woods a few miles down. I won't need it anymore. No more talking. No more politics. I reach out to Six telepathically. The Anubis is over the mountain. Get ready. I glance back in the direction I came from. Our warship is too far off to see, but the storm clouds aren't. Thick and dark, they blot out the stars, ruining what was a perfectly clear night sky. Lightning shivers through them. The wind picks up, and I can hear hailstones falling in the distance. They roll towards me, towards the Anubis. It'll be a storm like the Mogadorians have never seen. We're coming.